Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to another episode of the Trial Lawyer View podcast, where we are thrilled to welcome Rob Levine. He's the founder and CEO of Rob Levine & Associates. Rob's journey is a testament to his commitment to service and advocacy, which has led him to become a prominent figure in personal injury law. His firm, known for its focus on personal injury, Social Security, and veterans disability, has made a significant impact in delivering justice and support to clients across Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Connecticut. With a career spanning over two decades, Rob has not only excelled in legal practice, but has also championed numerous philanthropic initiatives. Rob's expertise extends far beyond the courtroom, as he has adeptly utilized cutting-edge technology and innovative approaches to manage his law firm effectively. With the implementation of Domo software, Rob has streamlined operations and enhanced the firm's performance metrics, driving efficiency and growth. Additionally, his strategic use of offshore talent and outsourcing has further optimized his firm's capabilities. Today, we will delve into Rob's insights on law firm management, key metrics and management systems, the impact of technology on legal practice, and his unique array of companies that provide support services to personal injury law firms. Join us as we explore the practices and principles that have made Rob Levine a legal visionary. Rob, welcome to Trial Lawyer View, and thank you for joining me today on the podcast. Appreciate you taking the time.
I mean, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You know, we were talking a little bit about CEO function in a law firm right before we started the podcast, and you were talking about you having the opportunity after you had built your own structure to go into another firm and really get in the weeds and help them. I'm curious with how you've built your firm and seeing what you just saw, you know, what are the key metrics that you focus on to ensure your firm's efficiency, profitability, and ultimate business success? And if that also you can encompass, you know, talking about your role as law firm CEO and having someone like a COO and the management team and all of that as part of this kind of concept.
Sure. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. Will you break it down?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, let's start with the role of CEO. So technically, right, the idea of the CEO is the visionary of the law firm. And a law firm is no different than any other business. It's just a business that's in the practice of law. And from when I started, right, I started it from scratch, myself, me, and then it was me and one, me and two, me and 10, me and 50, now it's me and 200. It's kind of a sliding scale because I want to make sure that whoever's listening, whether they're a 10-man shop, a 50-man shop, or a 200-man shop, the CEO role always has to exist, but how much time you dedicate to it depends on, obviously, the size of your firm. If you're a 5-man shop, you're still an operator. You're still practicing law. You're handling cases. You're talking to clients. If you're a 200-man shop, I don't talk to clients very often. So maybe 7-figure cases, I'll talk to clients, or maybe I get involved when we talk about strategy in bigger cases. But for the most part, I'm a visionary and I'm thinking about where we're going, what's next, bigger picture, and I have a group of people reporting to me. So that's important for people to remember as they have to dedicate a certain amount of time, let's say on a weekly basis. So if it's 10% of your time, you know, and you work 50 hours a week, 5 hours a week should be dedicated to the CEO role, the big picture, the vision. As your firm gets bigger, maybe it becomes 25%. At some point, it's 50%. And it works its way up to where you're maybe at 100%. And all you do is focus on running the firm. So from a structure perspective, who reports up to me? So we have a COO. And so that's the chief operating officer, obviously reports directly to me. I have a CFO, the chief financial officer. That person reports directly to me. We have a director of marketing. You could call them a CMO. Technically, that person could report to the COO, but I like to be involved in the marketing. So that person kind of co-reports to the COO and to myself because I like to be involved in the marketing. And so underneath those people, so on the financial side, there's a controller. There's a couple of accountants, a couple of bookkeepers. All of those people report only to the CFO. The CFO is the only one that comes to me. Under the COO, we do three things. We do personal injury, social security, and then veterans disability. And so each division has two real people managing it. One is a lawyer, so the managing attorney of that division, and then you have the managing paralegal who's responsible for the paralegals, and they report directly to the COO. They have operations meetings. So I really consider our fourth division our call center. Our call center is like 45 people. So that in and of itself is its own division, and the call center manager reports directly to the COO. Sometimes I'll do like skip level meetings. So I'll drop in and go to the operations meeting and listen to what the directors are saying to the COO and, you know, hear different points of view. So we were talking about my experience in the last year in going over to Isaacs and Isaacs and being the CEO at Daryl's firm. And so it was an amazing experience because at my firm, I'm far removed from being in the weeds. And at Daryl's firm, I spent the last year in the weeds, right? We launched Filevine, built a finance department, built an HR department, you know, so from the top down, really at every level of working on things, and realized with all the new automations and technology and different concepts and ideas and things that I learned going to seminars from other people, hey, let's apply this here, Daryl. And then I thought to myself, that's not really what we're doing at our firm. And then I'm talking to my CEO and saying, hey, I've got this great idea, which I don't do as much as I used to. I used to go to a seminar and I'd sit in a seminar and I would just send text messages for 2 or 3 days straight to my COO saying, hey, why aren't we doing this? Or, hey, here's a great idea. Let's do that. So I've learned discipline to pick my top three things, come back to the firm and say, hey, here's three ideas. Take a look. Tell me what you think. And then maybe we implement one or two of them over the next 3 months, let's say. I've learned to temper myself in a little bit of discipline over the years. I mean, I've been doing it a long time now. I think 24 years I've had my own firms.
Well, since I did ask you a compound question, let me go back to part of it, which was the key metrics. Idea. I'm curious, like with your COO, what do you guys look at to make sure that the firm is operating with peak efficiency, profitability, and then ultimately leading to business success? Because I assume that like other businesses, you have a scorecard, you have some type of way of evaluating how the firm is doing.
Yeah, for sure. So again, right, talking about the size of the firm and what you're looking at, I think has a lot to do with which are the metrics as the CEO you look at. So for me, because I have team leads who are really one level up above the team, and they're responsible for a team of 6 to 8 people on average. So they have no cases and they're managing those people and they're running their own reports and they're responsible and their bonus structure is solely based on the success of their 6 to 8 team members. And then they're reporting to somebody who then reports up to a director, and the director is responsible for running their own reports. And then the COO, the CFO, the CMO all have their own reports. So I try at my level to pick out which reports are most important to me because I'm listening to the COO on a regular basis. We meet twice a week. Well, we have an executive board, but in a normal situation where you're only running one business, right? Let's just say a law firm, because we're running multiple businesses, but just the law firm, your COO would be reporting to you. So I look at metrics that are really important to me that I want to see every day. So I start my day by looking at the first report is, how many cases did we open? And so that report shows me each division, personal injury, social security, and veterans disability. It shows me the total number of cases we opened for the day, where we are month to date, and where our percentage is to goal. So I have a goal set for how many cases I want to open for each division, and it tells me where we're at percentage to goal. It tells me how many cases we wanted but signed. So cases that we couldn't overcome an objection. Somebody says, you know, I really thought I would call three lawyers and get, you know, more information before I made a decision. Obviously, it's the job of that person in the call center to overcome it. So I look at our wanted but signed ratio. I look at the total number of leads compared to the number of cases we're signing. And so that's my first report. Every day, I look at how many cases we're opening. Obviously, I have a cash flow report. So it's a 13-week report. What we're expecting for revenue, what we're expecting for expenses, and that's run out by 13 weeks. So every week, it's being updated with the next week ahead, and it goes 13 weeks forward. We run financial projections, so the CFO along with the COO, they have posted for the next 12 months, always forward 12 months, we're looking at all of our revenue, all of our expenses. So I have the actual projections, and then we post our true numbers against it. So I'm looking at how did we do against our projections? Are we up? Are we down? And so then if we're down, the question is, do we have expenses that are higher than what our projections were? Is our revenue below what we expected? And we talk about what do we need to do to fix it? What's the problem? Is it just an anomaly or do we see a trend? And we run trend line reports to see which direction we're going, because obviously our goal is always growth. I don't think we've in 24 years ever been in a position where we didn't look for more the next year. People ask me often, when is enough enough? I don't know that there's really an answer to that question. I like growing. I love what I do. I love working a lot of hours. So I don't know that there's ever enough. And it's not about the money. It's more about, you know, I like solving problems. I like making a difference in people's lives. I like contributing. I want to create a legacy. So it's a little of everything, but it's definitely not focused on the money. I mean, I was a cop before I was a lawyer. So obviously from a perspective of lifestyle, I live pretty comfortably compared to when I was a police officer, I had three jobs. And so, I mean, I have more than three jobs today, I guess, but it's not about the money, because people always say to me, why do you need to make so much money? I said, yeah, it's not about the money. It's about the accomplishment and helping people and making a difference.
Well, it's a byproduct of running a business well. I mean, everything you described are key things we use. I think any business that's successful and growing and the market responds to that, that's part of the natural order of things is that. I'm interested in terms of your firm's operating system. What I mean by that is, you know, some law firms use the EOS traction model, for example. Other firms have their own operating system. How did you build this, what you just described in terms of how you operate? Did you create a system? Did you use a system? What was the genesis of it?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So I'll tell you first my Traction story. So I think Traction is an amazing program. We do consulting, one of our companies. We consult to other law firms. We have a mastermind. We can talk about it. But so, and I have lots of clients who use Traction, and I think it really works well. When we looked at Traction and we hired an implementer, I just was not ready to be able to give up control, allow an implementer to tell us what they thought, to be in my seat as the visionary and focus on my role. I was in everyone's role. This is probably over 10 years ago, I think we looked at Traction. There was just no way I could sit back. It just didn't work for me. I wasn't personally ready. Today, it would definitely work for us. Our system isn't that different, quite frankly, than Traction. I mean, over the years, we've done lots of different things and different ways of reporting and set up our corporate structure differently. I mean, now we're running multiple businesses. So we created the executive board, which has COOs from different businesses that sit at the executive board level. And then we meet on a regular basis. So twice a week for 2 hours, we meet to discuss things. And then in addition to that, I created an advisory board, which is just team members inside the business. And so the different businesses have their own advisory board, and their goal is to tell us what they think, what they want to work on. They work on their own projects. They work on projects we give them. They work on projects they come up with. And so the advisory board and the executive board kind of work in tandem together on different things. And that's part of, from a change management perspective, how we roll out new ideas to the team. So you get executives and then you get team members and we work together and then deliver that message. So it really works pretty smoothly. But so I went to Greece on vacation. At this point, it's probably 6 years ago. And I met a company out there. It was a television sponsored trip. And there was a company out there that was invited from the TV station that was putting on a presentation just as kind of a benefit to those who were on the trip. And the name of the company was called Shift. They're based out of Maryland. And something that he talked about just clicked. Like, you know, you just hear an idea and it really resonated with me. And so we hired them as consultants. And 6 years later, my consultant stayed the same person literally up until 2 months ago, maybe, and only because he left Shift to work for a much, much bigger company. Like, it's the largest international consulting company he got a job with. And the COO actually took over our account because we've grown so dramatically in this last 6 years, and we have so many different businesses going now. We have so many new things coming. I think they were just excited to be part of it. And so that's really where most of our structure and ideas came from. Was our consultant from Shift. My thoughts, his thoughts, my team's thoughts, a lot of collaboration.
Have you used that relationship with your consultant and also these masterminds to then bring that to other law firms and help educate to back to you what best practices are within this kind of concept of how to run the law firm?
100%. Whether I'm running a mastermind meeting or consulting with someone or I'm going to a meeting, it's always bilateral learning. If you're smart enough to recognize that there's always, I mean, we're on a journey, right? There's always something else to learn. And especially imagine with AI now. So it's insane the speed at which technology is traveling. I own two partners, Daryl, actually, and then Hope Wagner, who used to be my VP of Ops. She came up with this idea to create an AI generative company that we use to do surveys of a business. So you answer about 1,000 questions, goes into the model, and then it basically gives you recommendations, scorecards. It'll give you quarterly reports all through AI. It's where AI is going is unbelievable. But so there's no question that the information I learned from my consultant and I implement in my law firm, and then I go to a seminar and I bring it to other law firms, and then I take from other law firms what I see that someone else is doing, and I apply it back to my law firm, bring it back to my consultant. The key is never to be the smartest person in the room, right? So you want to surround yourself with brilliant people, and then as a group or a consortium, you're all helping each other grow.
And I want to transition to talk about technology because that was a really good segue. But the point about masterminds, because I've been a part of and continue to be a part of many with other businesses. And for me, that's been incredibly useful in bringing things back to the organization and as a sounding board when there are challenges, because there's always challenges in business. So that idea is in the space of personal injury practice is such a key thing to help law firms that are looking for that. How do they get to the next level quicker? What helps them accelerate? So that's incredibly powerful thing that you are talking about in that regard.
Yeah, there's no question that, I mean, I've been in mastermind groups over 15 years. I originally joined PILMA, which is the Personal Injury Lawyers Management and Marketing Association. run by Ken Hardison. I've known Ken.
He's been on the podcast.
Yes, Ken's great. And so we were small, like maybe 20 people. And so my friend, Paul Harding, who's a partner at Martin Harding Mazzotti, and he was in one of Ken's like premier mastermind groups. Paul was a large law firm. And Paul said to Ken, hey, I want Rob to join our mastermind group. And Ken's like, oh, he should be in one of the lower groups. He's not really that big. And Paul said to him, no, Rob has big ideas. He's going to end up growing. We should let him in this group. And Ken took a chance on me and actually discounted the fee 50% in the first 2 years for me. I think it was like $20,000 a year back then, which was a lot of money for the size we were at the time. I thought to myself, this better pay off. And so it did in spades. I mean, so when I say that we do personal injury, social security, and veterans disability, I went to one of Ken's boot camps for social security, and I met Bethany Meeks, who was Ken's like number one paralegal when Ken was running his law firm, and she was teaching the course, and they used the same case management system I did. And I went up to Ken and I'm like, hey, can I talk to Bethany and have her help us build the social security division? Sure. Just work it out with her. He didn't even want part of it. He's like, whatever you work out with her. She started coming up to my firm, I think in the beginning on a monthly basis, well, probably weekly in the first couple of months, and then monthly and then quarterly. I owe it to her, no question, and Ken from what boot camp. And then veterans disability, I met Jan Dills in the mastermind group. Do you know Jan?
Yeah.
So she's in West Virginia, runs a huge veterans disability practice. And just listening to her in our mastermind group and her helping me is how we built a veterans disability practice. So I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for all of the great people I met. There's no questions.
Let's say you talked about AI, so I want to transition to a question around technology because it's, you know, changing so rapidly and crucial for a modern personal injury law firm to keep up with what's going on and leveraging the software, case management software, to ultimately manage their practices. So I wanted to ask you about Domo software because I heard you talk about it, and I'm curious about the specific features that maybe have been most beneficial of that for law firms in terms of tracking operations and performance, and whether that's just what you've observed using it yourself or external, whatever you think is going to be most relevant for listeners.
Sure. So first of all, so everybody has an understanding of the scale of Domo, and I'll explain what it is. So if you watch the Indy 500 last year, all of the statistics, all of the data, all of the reporting, all was done by Domo. So Domo isn't software built for law firms. Domo is software built for any business, and lots of Fortune 500 companies use it. So what is Domo? So Domo is a single platform. Think of it with a set of tentacles, and those tentacles can attach to any other platform. So for example, if you're using FileVine or any other case management system, you can create a connection between Domo and FileVine to extract data. And when I say data, I mean any data point whatsoever inside the case management system, you can pull it into Domo. You can connect it to your QuickBooks. You can connect it to Google AdWords campaign. You can connect it to your human resources information system, so ADP or Paylocity. There is no platform it won't connect to. So if you run a on-premises server, there's part of Domo called a workbench. You can build it into your on-premises server and extract data. If it's in the cloud and there's an API, we connect to the API and we pull data that way. If there isn't an API, we can literally build a connector that will connect between Domo and whatever platform that you want to connect. I haven't seen something that's not connectable. So now you've connected to every source of information that you have. So instead of running reports inside each thing individually, you can now have a dashboard built in Domo and individual dashboards. The fee they charge you is per extraction. So you're only paid for pulling data from a platform. what you do with the data, how many different dashboards you build for your whole team, one for your CFO, one for your CMO, one for you as the CEO, one for your team leads, one for your paralegals. No cost. And so now imagine taking, as the CEO, all of these platforms and putting dashboards together. And not only are they, when you run a report in QuickBooks, you only look at QuickBooks data. Inside Domo, I can say, I want to look at my data with QuickBooks against data from my case management system and project forward. And I want to do these other factors and these other variables. And now they've added in AI thinking into Domo. So I want the system to be able to think forward and project and consider all of these variable options and give me back reports on what I can look at. It's amazing. So to have your finger on the pulse of your business and have all of the information in one place, it's just amazing.
So can you talk about the Domo software solution, how it's specifically played a role in integrating all of your data and analyzing your firm's performance? How do you translate that into using it to make sure the firm is running at peak or operationally efficient?
Sure. So let's just talk about the case management system. So there are, obviously, when you run a law firm, you should have KPIs, right? So what are the metrics? What are the key point indicators that I should be measuring to make sure that everything is happening organizationally across the scale on a regular basis and we don't have a backup of data? So from how many cases I open to how long it takes to get a client into treatment, to how long it takes me to report a claim, to how long it takes me to establish liability, to how long it takes me to get someone's car fixed on average, to how long it took me to get them into treatment, how often are they going to treatment, how often are they missing appointments, how long do they treat for over the length, how long does it take to get records in? I mean, the list is endless. I can take all of those KPIs, extract that data, and create averages and say, send me a report for anything that's over and under. So I want to know anything that takes longer than X, this is all I want to look at. And I want to look at it by case manager. So now send me the data for any cases in our system that take longer than X with this case manager and give me that report. And now give me a trend history for the last 90 days or give me a trend history of the last 12 months of this person's reports on all of their KPIs and show me when they're over and when they're under. I mean, if you can imagine it, you can do it. So to be able to compare one team member to another, to be able to compare one case type to another, to be able to compare within the same case type, the amount of property damage to a vehicle. Show me our settlements for cases in property damage that were under $1,000, over $2,000, over $5,000. And tell me, plot for me the value of those cases. How did it affect our cases against length of treatment, value of treatment? I mean, if you can think about any factor you want, it will give you the data, plot it out for you, build trend lines, and allow you to figure out what's the best way for me to run my practice on the numbers, on the data.
Putting aside Domo for a second, or you could include that in answering this, can you discuss how you've leveraged technology and data to grow your law firm? How is that fueling your growth?
Sure. So first of all, let's forget about AI. Let's just talk about the basics and let's start at the beginning in the call center. So maybe 4 years ago, we switched to RingCentral as our phone system. And RingCentral has an amazing setup in their phone system for just call centers. So you can have RingCentral Office. So that runs your whole office and just like normal voicemails and forwarding and all that stuff. And then special software for the call center. So one day after everything set up, I thought to myself, I wonder what's going on with all of the people who hang up and how are we tracking that and are we calling people back? And so we got on a call with one of the developers at RingCentral and he's like, we don't have anything that does that. I said, well, I want to be able to call people back that hang up. So anyone who's on connected to us for greater than 15 seconds is like two rings, less than that, literally they dialed and hung up like wrong phone number. So greater than 15 seconds, I want the system to automatically identify that they called, they connected, 15 seconds, they hung up without talking to a person. I want the system to automatically call them back and give them to the next call center person. And he's like, okay. So they scoped it. We paid for it. It didn't exist. And they built it. And so in the following 10 months after it was built and operational, we dropped about 2,000 calls where people over 15 seconds hung up. The system called all 2,000, and we signed 643 cases out of those 2,000 calls. If you figure out the average fee that a law firm makes, whoever's listening to this, what your average fee is per case, and multiply it out times those 643 calls, and then figuring your loss ratio, what cases you don't win, you're talking about millions and millions of dollars. That was 10 months. We've been doing it now for over 3 years. So when I think about the amount of money that we probably lost and clients who come to me that don't have any idea what I'm talking about have operated their business forever. Daryl, right? His law firm didn't have it. He's been practicing 30 years his law firm's existed. And anyone out there, think about, you know, obviously we're a large law firm with a lot of business, but think about you're only losing 10 calls a month and you call them back and you save five cases. Your average fee is 10 grand. It's 50 grand a month. That's $600,000 a year. And we all have hangups. There is no one that doesn't have hangups. It's just part of the nature of call centers, right? There's always people who hang up for different reasons. My job from a technology perspective when I'm consulting and training and helping is to figure out where are the holes and how do we plug the holes, right? Because everybody has holes. We're all losing cases for one reason or another throughout the entire process. So there's one way that technology helped us grow significantly. Connected to that is just the RingCentral system. So in our intake center, we connected the phone system to our case management system. So on an inbound call, it automatically scrapes every single phone number in the case management system. So it immediately identifies from the caller ID coming in, does the phone number exist? If it doesn't exist, we assume that's a new client. Only new clients go into intake. If you run a receptionist, which is what lots of law firms do, and she has to answer the phone for your vendors, your existing clients, and your new clients, you have more hangups than anyone. Because all she can do all day is barely get two words out of her mouth because she's trying to keep up with the phone keep ringing. And then she has to transfer you, right? And when you have a transfer, you automatically end up with a percentage of hangups. So our goal is every new client comes into the call center, and when someone answers the phone, they are the decision maker. They have empathy. They have compassion. They listen. They qualify. They sign electronically. That person is our client. So just that connection, right? So is tremendously, well, that's really how, when I say for Daryl, we went from 190 to 300. So in my first year, we cut his marketing budget by $1 million and we increased his case signed cases from 190 to 300 by introducing technology in the call center and then training call center. He had four people in his call center when I started. I think we were at 12 when I left. So 100% closed system. So if you have a system in your office where people call and then, oh, everybody in the call center is busy, it rolls over to the next paralegal somewhere in the office or rolls over to your answering service, you have a lot of hangups and a lot of disconnects. So all of those little things and little pieces, or if someone texts you, right, and then you say to the person, oh, we have, so you're using an outside texting service who does your chat. I have somebody live standing by who can talk to you. We made that mistake for years, right? People would chat with us. We used an outside service, and they do a great job. The problem is I let them say to the person, oh, I have somebody live that can talk to you right now. And the person says, okay. But what I never looked at was, what is the percentage of people that they transfer to our Live Connect that hang up? It was 50%. Why? So I give you three choices of how to talk to my office: inbound phone call, form fill, or chat. Well, you chose to chat. Why in God's name would I force you to talk to a person? You obviously don't want to talk to someone. You want to chat, text. So we now have in our system, if the outside company that we use to chat with people signs people electronically without talking to them, forwards the information to us, we text the client and introduce ourselves, and we ask, would you prefer telephone or text for your communication in your case? We have some clients who say, I don't ever want to pick up the phone. I'm happy to text. So from day one to literally signing their settlement sheet, it's all text messages. Got to give people what they want.
Those are some incredible tips. I hope that anyone listening picks up on looking at these things, right? The value of data and analyzing, and what you can discern from all of that is powerful, which is why I started out asking the questions about how you operate your firm, what are the metrics. So with that, though, I want to transition to talk a little bit about really more nuts and bolts of making sure that you're running a firm as efficiently and profitably. So specifically, I'll ask you a bit of a self-serving question. We're an outsourcing partner for personal injury law firms. You know, says to a personal injury law firm, hey, all of the lawyer time, paralegal time, administrative time spent on the phone with Medicare, for example, trying to resolve conditional payments, or with an ERISA recovery contractor, we should be doing that for you. Takes that time and expense off of your firm's balance sheet, and you deploy that $500,000 you just saved in your marketing budget or wherever, whatever. I know that you, because we had talked a little bit about this, have created a medical record retrieval company, I assume along the lines of, you know, the annoyance and the problems with medical record retrieval, because I'm intimately familiar with that with our clients, and, you know, because that's part of what goes on in their interactions with us. I'm curious as to the implications of something like that for running a firm more efficiently, taking what is an administrative task off of the plate of a personal injury law firm?
That's a great question. And it's really that it's taking it off the plate of your paralegal.
Yep.
So when we think about law firms and value and growth, there's really only three ways for a law firm to make more money. We increase our marketing and we bring in more cases, right? We reduce our expenses, which really doesn't make us more revenue. It just increases our net because we're saving money and efficient. Or we increase the value of our cases. We increase the value of our cases by training really good paralegals and attorneys who know how to do a great investigation and medically manage clients. If I ask the paralegal to really stay on top of her clients and talk to them every 30 days and do the investigation up front and communicate with the lawyer, and oh, on top of that, here's a list of administrative tasks that I need you to do as well. The more I dump on her plate, the less time she has to do what she's well compensated and highly trained for, which is increasing the value of my cases. So if I want to make more money, I either have to bring in more cases or I optimize the cases I have by increasing the value. So by outsourcing, right, so sending to your company my liens, sending to my company medical record retrieval, I save in labor cost, number one, because when I outsource, I pass the cost on to the client. So for me, medical record retrieval, I already charge the client the cost of the medical record. That's a given. Every law firm does it. And so in addition to that, I'm going to charge the client the cost of retrieving a record. So we charge $39.95 per record. So it's a nominal cost. And when you add up the total number of records, you know, it's $300, $400, $500. When you're handing somebody a check for $10,000, $20,000, $100,000, nobody notices. And if they do, and somebody, you know, they have a small settlement and they say, oh, what's that big expense? We just take it off. So for the amount of money that we're saving in the big picture, I want every client to be satisfied. So if I hear anything that creates any dissatisfaction, we just say, oh, don't worry about it. We'll eat the cost. No problem. This is what you agreed to up front, but we're happy to eat the cost. And so we take it off their sheet. And so if you're really smart, you're going to have a line of credit. And so you're going to have one line of credit for your business, just for general operations, for carrying costs when you need to, and the other for the client expense. And in your fee agreement, you're going to put that you agree to pay any interest charges associated with your client expenses, such as ordering the police report, medical records, your cost, depositions, whatever the case may be. And you're literally running your law firm for free on those pieces, because the client pays the interest, the carrying cost, and then the client pays the actual expense. So, and then I'm increasing the value of the case by having the paralegal focus on what's most important, increasing the average fee, and in the beginning, setting up my investigation and building a solid case. So yeah, I think that outsourcing is extremely important for those pieces of the case that are administrative in nature.
Well, and too, I mean, you know, one consideration too, like on our end, is we're taking some liability off the firm too by making sure that they're resolving compliantly, for example, the government Medicare conditional payments or Medicare Advantage plans, for example, who have become very litigious and try to assert the double damages clause against personal injury law firms when they miss identifying an Advantage plan, which is easy to do when the case is settled. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why it makes sense. And that was really beautifully articulated. I wanted to ask you about something I think that we had discussed previously when we had chatted, which is using offshore talent, because the idea of the efficiency and profitability boost that you can get from going offshore with certain things. I'm curious about your thoughts and how, if you've leveraged that, how to best leverage it.
Sure. So I own Top Notch Remote Solutions. That company came about as a result of COVID. So if you came to me pre-COVID and said, hey, what do you think about outsourcing or having team members work from home, working remote, I would have thought you were insane, had three heads, and that conversation would have ended pretty quick. So I wanted people in my office. I wanted to be looking over the shoulder. I wanted to know what they were doing. And so I was stupid and short-minded, in my opinion. And so when COVID hit and quarantine happened, we immediately let go 25% of our team. At the time, we were only 100 people. So when I tell you we keep growing, since 2020 to 2024, we went from 100 to 200 people. And so we let go 25 people because I was concerned. No one knew how long the quarantine would happen. And I thought, okay, well, if you can't drive, you can't get into a car accident. If you can't go outside, you can't have a slip and fall, and your neighbor's dog isn't biting you, and you're not going to Home Depot and having something fall down on you. So we need to be careful. And so we made all sorts of deals with TV stations, billboard companies. You know, they gave us a ton of free stuff. They were amazing. All of our vendors were amazing at how they helped us, not realizing it was only going to last 6 months, 6 weeks, really, is when Rhode Island reopened. And I made deals with companies for months and months and months. And so after we laid off the 25 people, I thought to myself, okay, I don't know how many cases we had then. Today we have like 11,000 open cases. Back then it was less than we have now, obviously. But how are we going to keep running all of our cases and giving great customer satisfaction with 25% less of our team? And so I got the idea of being international. Like, well, everybody's already working from home. We're set up to be remote. Like, we have offsite servers and offsite backup, and people can work from home, and we have a remote desktop server. We were always set up for it. We just never used it. And so we looked into hiring internationally, and I started using an agency. And within a few months, I thought to myself, I can do a better job than the agency can, which is really how Records on Time came about. So when I first wanted to use an outsourced medical record retrieval company, I used a company called MediConnect, which was based out of India. And so I got a million complaints from all of our vendors complaining they didn't understand what they were saying. They were calling six times a day. They were just hassling people. And I thought, we can do a better job. And I built our own record retrieval company, but just for my law firm. So it had its own name, own tax ID number, like it was separated, but they worked for me. And then after several years, I thought, we should be doing this for other people. And that's when it expanded. So the same thing happened. I thought to myself, I really don't like the way this agency relationship works. I don't have really control over the team member. I don't really know how much they're getting paid. Retention seems to be a problem, and I don't think they're getting paid enough. They're not being treated properly. So we opened companies in Colombia and Peru. It's called Top Notch Remote Solutions. We have, I don't know, over 300 now, I think, over 300. It's more than that, probably. We have a lot of people outside the country that work for Top Notch in both countries. And we've expanded now into the Philippines. I'm using an agency at the moment in the Philippines trying to figure out the system there, but I think we're probably going to open our own company there. And so it's been phenomenal. So first of all, I would never go back to being in the office. Having a remote team, I think, gives them freedom and allows them to have better control over their life. And people who work on salary, in my opinion, work harder and more hours than they did when they used to drive to the office, because now they're like, oh my God, I saved all this time driving, and they just keep working and they appreciate it. And they're with their families. And when they have young kids, it's just 100% better. And from a productivity perspective, I mean, we monitor everything. So it's not like I don't know what's going on, thinking that I needed someone in my office. Like, the reality is, how do I know any better what you're doing at your desk than what you're doing at your desk at home? I'm not standing there looking at you.
Yes.
This is ridiculous, right? Yeah. And so it's been amazing. So, yeah, I think that outsourcing is phenomenal.
Yeah, interesting, because we built a team in Colombia. And, you know, the ideas that you were talking about pre-COVID, very much the same, but to your point that you just made, I'm not standing over anybody's desk, and really I have no idea other than the metrics we use to measure performance. And when we looked at it during COVID, there was no difference. I mean, you know, people were getting their work done. So, you know, ultimately providing that freedom and flexibility, in addition to also looking at the offshore, certainly transforms your profitability, because it also impacts how much office space you need, how much infrastructure. I mean, obviously there's costs for people going remote as well, but certainly the offshore part of it too, though, when you build the right solutions, and, you know, whether you build it internally like you did and then offer it externally. I mean, we built ours internally and went direct because we evaluated the agency route and it just didn't make sense for what we were building, and did it ourselves. Right. So I know you've built a lot of things, and I wanted to ask you about Law Firm Growth Solutions and why you created it, and about some of the different other businesses that you've built that can help law firms ultimately become sure. More efficient and profitable.
So I should probably, I didn't really explain for Top Notch. So originally I built it for me, kind of like how I built Records on Time, the record retrieval for me. And my friend Paul Harding, who I mentioned earlier, right, runs a large firm up in New York, started calling me and saying, hey, can you find us team members in another country? And I said, no, because that means they work for me and I have to outsource them to you. That's not really what this was, just not what this was. He's like, come on, just do it. And so I don't know how many people we have in his firm now, 20, I think, something like that. And so I decided to do it. But there are lots of, if you Google, right, lots of agencies you could get people from in another country. But if you Google what we do, there's no one else that does what we do. And the difference is that we recruit, and then we hire, and then we train. So I hired the training and development director from T-Mobile. So she ran all of T-Mobile's training and development programs. And she built for me an entire training and development program. Learning management system, videos, tests. We had a 745-page training manual that we used to do 100% live training when we hired people for us. And she's like, this is ridiculous. She's like, first of all, people, adults don't want to learn in a live training session 100%. You have to train different ways. Some of it should be live. Some of it should be videos. Some of it should be test taking. Some of it should be scenarios. Some of it should be group learning. She's like, that's how adults learn. It's not like we're teaching kids. So she revamped our entire academy. And so now we literally run, if you want to hire a case manager from me, we run a 12-week academy. So 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, they're in school learning everything to run a case from cradle to grave. You don't pay a dime until I place them in your law firm. So you hire someone, sign a contract, and then we recruit, find the person. You can interview them if you want, if you're not picking someone who's already in one of our ongoing academies. And then I place them in your law firm, you start paying me. So it's $3,100 a month. So if you think of the cost of hiring a paralegal, not going to be less than 50 grand. It's probably closer to 60 grand. And then add 10% employer tax, add 401k, add health insurance, you're well over 70, 75 grand. You pay me $3,100 a month. They're trained. I handle the entire HR. I pay their benefits. I pay their pension. I give them everything they need and control their HR schedule. And you just manage them in your law firm. It's a game changer for a law firm, especially a smaller law firm that doesn't have a training program. Most law firms, you know, the ones that I consult to, they don't have training programs built. They bring someone in, sit them at a desk and teach them, oh, do this, and then we'll do that. You know, we teach you literally everything you need to know. So, and then same thing for intake. We train intake people for personal injury for call centers. So you come in, you go through a 2-week class, and then you're assigned a 1-to-1 mentor. So you're literally listening to your mentor take calls. They switch, and then the mentor listens to them take calls. The mentor steps in if they need to. They critique them. They get them better. It's anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks of training. And by the time they graduate, they literally can, they understand personal injury. They can screen a call. They have compassion. They have empathy. They have a high wanted but signing ratio. I need you over 95%. And so they know how to do the contract, sign them electronically, the whole nine yards. So it's been phenomenal. And it's working. So why Rob Levine Law Firm Growth Solutions? You know, so Daryl and I were doing Brain Trust Legal together. I love Daryl, but he's decided after we rebuilt his law firm to go back into his law firm as CEO. And he also loves trial work. He went to the Jerry Spence Academy and then just went to the advanced school. So he doesn't have time to do Brain Trust Legal. It's definitely time consuming. And so he said to me, you know, I want to focus on my own law firm. We got it to where it is, and I want to feel like I'm running it. So I said, good, do it. And so we built Legal Ascent. So he wanted to close Brain Trust Legal. So instead of being 50-50 partners, what I'm building going forward, I own Legal Ascent. So the law firm Growth Solutions are all companies that I run. So obviously, we already had Records on Time. We had top-notch remote solutions. And then Legal Ascent is our mastermind company. So it's law firms that want to come in. And when you said earlier, I hope that people realize all of the different pieces of value that you just gave, talking about that small blurb about the call center. So that's the goal, right, is we meet 4 times a month. 1 week is on goal setting. The second week of the month is on is breakout rooms. If you want to focus on intake, operations, marketing, whatever it is, the third week is hot topics. The fourth week we review on breakout rooms so you can keep going with your plan on building out whatever you are so you have consistency, and then go back to goal setting. And so then we have 2 live events a year. So professional speakers, presentations, breakout groups, everything that you really need to continue to scale your law firm. So the goal, right, I love teaching. It's in my blood. My father was a college professor for, I don't even know how many years, 35 plus years. He was a biology professor. My older brother is what I would call brilliant. He speaks like 5 languages. He graduated from University of Chicago with a PhD in political philosophy, 2 master's degrees. Like, he's just at a, talking to him is aggravating because it's just at another level, right? And so he's a college professor. And so, yeah, I like to teach. And so being able to give back and also learn, it's not like I'm always just teaching. I learn plenty, right? Everybody has great ideas. So as long as we're working together to scale and grow, it's just been amazing. So yeah, that's what Legal Ascend is. Innovate Legal Technology is the other company. So Stephanie Cowan, who I met a year ago, she was the implementer that helped us build FileVine at Daryl's law firm. So she worked for another company. She also was a Domo implementer. And so we got to know each other over probably 6 months or so, working together on that project at Daryl's office. And then we went to Utah to Domo training. I took 10 people with me, 5 from Daryl's office, 5 from mine, to further everybody's education. We have 3 Domo implementers, and we wanted the boot camp and more training, and they're always running training. And so it's called Domo Palooza. Anyway, so while we were at Domo, I stole her from the company she was working for. and she came to work for me full time. And so she originally was the director of technology for Innovate, and she's now the COO of Legal Ascend and Innovate. Super smart person. And Innovate does everything we talked about, right? So it looks at your legal tech stack. It evaluates your case management system. If you don't have one, you need one. We can help you figure out what's the right technology for you, whether it's Hona, whether you're using Juvo, whether it's a case management system, whether you're interested in Domo. So we help you figure out which piece of technology you need to add to your tech stack. We help you implement it, and then we help you manage it all. So when I started as a lawyer, I didn't think I was going to be a tech company, but at this point, I think I do as much tech as I do law.
Sounds like it. Well, so in wrapping up today's episode, I wanted to ask you, because of all the things you've talked about, maybe three common mistakes you see law firms consistently make, and how can they avoid making those mistakes in whatever aspect, whether it's technology, management of the firm, or marketing, or whatever it might be. I'm just curious if there's three things that you could hone in on that you would say are mistakes and how to correct those mistakes.
Sure. So number one is the owner or the CEO. In small to mid-sized law firms, almost always doesn't spend time on that scale that we were talking about to be able to focus on working on their business. They're almost always drowning in their business. So they're not putting enough time to think about their mission, their vision, and their values. Where do they want to be? What is my goal? Putting it on paper, doing the exercise, right? And really thinking about what I want to become in 1 year, 3 year, 5 year. And then from that, you work it backwards. And so if this is my goal, what is it I need to reach my goal? How many cases do I need to open? What is my revenue structure? What do I need for marketing? What do I need for people? And building that plan. That's hard for people to do. First of all, obviously, if you went to college for whatever, and then you went to law school, nobody taught you business school, right? And so you don't learn how to run a business in law school, and law firm's a business. So that's a huge problem for people to learn how to make that transition to get their firm to the next level. The second biggest mistake is for sure intake. You look at Daryl's firm when I got there. It's not like they weren't a great law firm. They were a great law firm. He has a tremendous brand. Everybody knows who he is. He was opening 190 cases a month with 100 team members, making a lot of money. But with fixing intake, adding technology, and really doing all of the secret sauce, the tricks that we talked about, right? Adding in those pieces, we went from 190 to 300 cases a month simply by fixing intake. So I think people don't recognize how many holes they really have in the system. And so they don't spend enough time thinking about how to add technology to fix it. They don't even know the technology exists. So that's why I joined mastermind groups years ago, is so I could learn, because you don't know what you don't know. If you don't have someone who's helping you, if you don't have someone who's consulting to you, if you don't go to a mastermind group and listen, how do you ever know what you don't know? So that's probably the second biggest mistake. The third, I guess if you said marketing, I would say that every law firm should build their Google business profiles, update it, and turn them into LSAs. So local service ads are without a doubt across this country, pretty much uniformly, the lowest case acquisition cost. And there's lots of law firms I know that don't even know what an LSA ad is, never mind how to optimize it and what to do with it. So I would say those are the top three.
Great tips. And I really identify with that. The first one, because being a lawyer, you know, and transitioning into a business that is adjacent to the law, I learned a lot of lessons the hard way about running a business and being an entrepreneur. And none of it did they teach it in law school. And my undergraduate was in psychology, so I didn't have a business degree. I went to Florida State for law school, and they had a dual MBA JD program at the time. And I thought, what do I need to do that for? In retrospect, it would have been probably the best decision I could have made. So I wouldn't have made so many or not just had that foundational, I guess, benefit of the business side of all of this, right? It's such a key point that you started with.
I mean, there's no question. We all just keep learning, right? So, for instance, Records on Time has its own URL, Top Notch has its own URL, and then we didn't even have the Rob Levine Law Firm Growth Solutions. They were all independent. And so now we're just starting to think about, because we added Legal Ascend and Innovate, from a marketing strategy. This is difficult. Like, how do we communicate? What's our elevator pitch so people understand what we do? Where's the one place that they can go? So now we're rethinking, right? How do we brand and market and figure out how to tie all of it together so that it makes sense to people? So, I mean, I learn every day. Yeah. If you don't have that mindset, right, to be the CEO, be the visionary, think about what's next, and listen and learn, it's hard to grow.
Yeah, growth mindset. Last question, and I always ask this of trial lawyers that come on the podcast, and it's, what's your view as a trial lawyer, which is really an invitation, open-ended invitation, as we close, talk about whatever you want to leave the audience and listeners with as we close it out.
What's my view as a trial lawyer?
You know, the podcast is Trial Lawyer View, so I always tailor it to ask that question. But you can talk about whatever you want here in closing us out. Anything that maybe we haven't talked about that you think you want to impart, or if there's something else, you know, whatever you'd like to talk about as we end.
My view is that the world is ever changing. And if you don't have the mindset to think forward, you're easily going to get passed by. And that not just in technology, but even right when we think about now, you have non-ownership of law firms, non-legal ownership, right? So you go to Arizona, and right, we think about what's coming, right? The hedge fund money that's coming. And if that sweeps across the country, so if we look at Australia, which was the first country in the world to allow non-lawyers to own law firms, and you look at what's happened there, exactly what you see happen in all the other businesses in the United States, right? So Originally, my law firm started in Rhode Island. So in Rhode Island, there used to be 77 privately owned mom-and-pop pharmacies. Today, there is zero, literally not one. And you're talking about only 20 years. In 20 years, it went from 77 to zero because of CVS, Walgreens, and the killer was Walmart. Because Walmart makes so much money in their superstore that they just give away things to bring you in. So pharmacy is a giveaway. Come in, we'll give you a free antibiotic, we'll give you a free this, we'll give you a free that. And then they spend a ton of money on other things. And so when hedge funds take over the United States and you see these monster law firms pop up, the mom and pop shops are going to have a hard time competing. Because so you either build now so that you can sell when the time comes, or you're big enough that you can compete because you created your share of voice, your foothold, that somebody's going to remember who you are, and you can compete against the huge amount of money that's going to be coming into the market. Now, maybe it never happens. Do I think it's going to happen? Yes. That's my opinion. I would bet on it.
I just look around here. Advent Health is, used to be Florida Hospital here. They have bought up almost every medical practice in town. There is not a doctor's office that you can walk into here in Orlando, Florida, most often. That's either not Advent Health or Orlando Health. Orlando Health is Orlando Regional Medical Center. They've just bought up everything. And I think you're right that down the line, depending on what states do, if Arizona is a model that gets adopted everywhere, and over time, it's going to be that.
Right. So. And people don't think about it. It originally started in Washington, D.C.
Yep.
So for the longest time, you could have non-ownership of law firms in Washington, D.C. No one ever really paid attention. Then it happened in Arizona. Then Utah created like the sandbox environment. Other states are all talking about it. Just hasn't passed yet. It's coming.
Yeah, agreed. Rob, if someone's been listening to this episode and wants to talk to you about whatever, maybe referring a case to you because they've got a case in Rhode Island, or they are interested in any of the businesses that you've talked about today that you've created to support law firms, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best email address for me is the one that's my name. So it's just rob@roblevine.com, or you can call me. So my cell phone is 401-714-1746.
And we'll include those in today's show notes. Rob, incredible episode. Thank you for joining me today, and we'll see everybody on the next episode of Trial Lawyer View.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This was another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.